Hey, it's Andrew, the Director of Literary Arts. Here at Literary Arts, we rely on our community, people like you, for support. To help make this podcast and all our programming possible, give today, literary-arts.org/donate. Welcome to Long Distance from the Archive Project. I'm Andrew Proctor, Executive Director of Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 35 years of literary arts in Portland. And this is Long Distance, a podcast-only series of conversations with great contemporary writers about their new books. Here's your host for the podcast, Amanda Bullock, the Director of Public Programs for Literary Arts.
Hello, I'm Amanda Bullock. Welcome to the second episode of Literary Arts new podcast, Long Distance. While we have been staying home, sheltering in place, I know that I have been deeply missing gathering in community at book events. We created this podcast to make a space to talk to authors about writing, reading, and their new books. This episode features a conversation with Megha Majumdar about her debut novel, A Burning. The story moves deftly between the perspectives of three characters in modern India. Jivan, a young Muslim woman, whose haphazard social media post about a train firebombing she witnesses results in her arrest and imprisonment. Her former gym teacher, who becomes increasingly involved with a right-wing political party. And Lovely, a Hijra, a third gender recognized in India, an aspiring actress whom Jivan has been teaching to speak English. Their narratives are interspersed with interludes from other characters, creating a polyphonic landscape of modern Kolkata and the injustices and hardships, the aspirations and dreams of the people making their lives there amid a rising tide of violent right-wing politics. Megha and I talked about how she brought that political discussion into her fiction, how her work as an editor informs her writing, the storytelling lessons from binge-worthy television shows, and of course, what she's been reading lately. I called Megha, who has been sheltering in Brooklyn, from my home in Portland. We, like so many of you these days, talked via Zoom, so please forgive any technical glitches or background sirens. We are all doing our best. Okay, so Megha, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today from Brooklyn.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about A Burning. And before I go into my probably way too many questions, I would love to ask you to read a little bit from the book and tell us a little bit about it.
Great. I'm so happy to. So A Burning is my debut novel, and it's the story of three people in contemporary India who are chasing big dreams as society makes this dangerous turn toward right-wing extremism around them. And I can tell you very quickly about the three people. There's a woman who wants to ascend to the middle class, and she gets in trouble for posting kind of a careless Facebook comment. There's a gym teacher who gets a taste of a little bit of political power as he starts climbing the ranks in this right-wing political party and realizes what he will surrender and what he will do in order to secure his hold on that power. And there is an aspiring actress who dreams of being a movie star and takes these little budget acting classes and has perhaps the wildest dream in India and anywhere else, which is to have fame in the movies. And so what I can do is read just a little bit from the beginning. And this is the section about the person who gets in trouble for posting something on Facebook.
"You smell like smoke," my mother said to me. So I rubbed an oval of soap in my hair and poured a whole bucket of water on myself before a neighbor complained that I was wasting the morning supply.
There was a curfew that day. On the main street, a police jeep would creep by every half hour. Daily wage laborers compelled to work would come home with arms raised to show they had no weapons. In bed, my wet hair spread on the pillow. I picked up my new phone, purchased with my own salary, screen guard still attached. On Facebook, there was only one conversation. And the more I scrolled, the more Facebook unrolled. The night before, I had been at the railway station, no more than a 15-minute walk from my house. I ought to have seen the men who stole up to the open windows and threw flaming torches into the halted train. But all I saw were carriages burning, their doors locked from the outside and dangerously hot. The fire spread to huts bordering the station, smoke filling the chests of those who lived there. More than 100 people died. The government promised compensation to the families of the dead, 80,000 rupees, which, well, the government promises many things. I'll stop there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's actually, I'm glad you read from the beginning, because I wanted to ask you, I always like hearing where a book begins for a writer, like where it started for you, whether it was a voice or a scene, or can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I think there are probably two origin stories that I can talk about. One is, I knew I wanted to say something about what was happening in India, this rise in hatred of the other, this turn to the right, and not just in India, you know, it was happening certainly here in the US, in Central Europe, in Brazil, in so many places around the world. And I wanted to write about how people still hold on to big dreams and still hold on to ambition and live with humor and joy in very hard conditions. So that was kind of what I knew I wanted to say in this book. And then once I started writing, I think one of the earliest images that I had was of this child fleeing on a train in this quest to improve their life and their parents' lives in some way. So the train image obviously remains strong in the book. And if you have a chance to read the book, I think you'll see that there's quite a bit here about the pain of seeing your parents challenged by the society around them, the pain of seeing your parents struggle and work really hard and be defeated institutions that they live within. And so I think that moment of high emotion of a child wanting to do something wild and reckless for their parent, that was one of the kind of earliest registers that I had.
Thank you. And you talked about kind of the three main characters, the three voices that the book shifts between, but there's also these interludes that I really loved throughout the book that are, some of them are very funny. Some of them are very like jarring in a good way, where they're really violent, or they just take you out of the narrative, but they both take you out of it and like put you deeper in it in this way. And so how did, again, in kind of the process of how the book came to be, how did these interludes come to be a part of the story, and did their form and their role change as you worked on the book, or can you talk about those a little bit?
The interludes, I think, came from a place of realizing that I could only write about three people with depth and nuance and give them story arcs when I knew that there were so many possible stories that I could follow. And so in the interludes, I wanted to gesture toward how many particular and rich stories exist, and just kind of point to that a little bit. And like you said, I did hope that they would deepen who the minor characters in the book are. I wanted to show that they weren't just devices in these other people's lives. They had particular contradictions and struggles and aspirations of their own, and there were compromises that they had to make. So it was just a way of trying to write, I think, the most complex and unsimplified book I could write.
Well, it's great. Thank you so much. You did a great job.
Thank you. So
I also hope people get a chance to read this. And you also work as an editor at Catapult. Can you talk a little bit about how your experience as an editor shapes your work as a writer, or doesn't? Maybe it doesn't, and vice versa. And also maybe kind of how we are talking in the time of shelter in place and quarantine, and how your roles as a writer, an editor, and a reader, what it's like to be a writer, an editor, and a reader right now, and how that might have changed for you.
I love being an editor, and an editor at Catapult specifically. Part of what I love about working at Catapult is that we take on, I think, really risk-taking, surprising books, and I always learn a lot from our books. So it feels like a really energizing and inspiring place to work. And even as a workplace, so many of my colleagues are writers and poets and artists, and it's just a really energizing place to work. And then in terms of, you know, how being an editor helps me be a better writer, I think because part of my job is to read a lot of manuscripts, over time, I gain a sense of what feels interesting to me in a story, what loses me in a story, what do I find surprising and pleasurable and exciting, and what do I find boring and dull? And I think it helps me sharpen those ideas for myself so that I can bring them to my own writing. And, you know, I was just finishing up edits on one of my author's books this morning, and it was just a reminder of how energizing it is to work very closely with another person's brilliant work, you know, to be so close to their sentences, to see what they're doing in each paragraph, to see how they are structuring a book, to see how they are bringing different subjects together. I work a lot on nonfiction, and I think that especially has proven really energizing to me, because I feel like the kind of curiosity and exploration that I'm exposed to through the books that I work on is just an incredible source of fuel for me.
I like that idea of like constant learning, that it's kind of like you just get to be in school forever, which is sort of what I would do if I had the resource time to do that. So that's great.
Sorry, you also asked about quarantine.
Oh yeah, just I feel like acknowledging this moment is important, and it's kind of all anybody can talk about for good reason. But I feel like I just am curious about how the art making process has shifted, and I feel like people think we have more time, but I have not found that. I have found my attention is very scattered and like my brain is not working.
Yes. So
I'm just kind of curious what the last couple months have been like, and if that's changing, or kind of what it's been like for you.
I think an interesting thing, now that I'm thinking about it, has been, you know, the reliance that I had on, well, I need this hour at a coffee shop to do my work. And, you know, sometimes a really lovely thing to do before or after a writing session might be to pop into a bookstore and, you know, browse some books and like get a book. And that's...
I miss bookstores.
I know. Same. Like go to a reading, like all of those sources of energy and community, they've been altered in such profound ways. But at the same time, I think coming back to writing, I think it has reminded me that looking inward and trying to find that space of solitude and complete concentration and focus comes from me, and I have to make it work. You know, I think it has maybe trimmed away some of the paraphernalia that I thought I needed and shown me that, you know, either I do my best to keep working and writing during these months, because who knows how long this period is going to be, or I think I will regret that I didn't try, and I don't want to face that kind of regret, so I want to keep trying. And some days it's 15 minutes of writing before work, and other days it's nothing, and on good days it's maybe an hour. So I think that just that balance of compassion and trying my best, even during this time, I think is maybe the way to go. I'm figuring it out.
I like that. Yeah. And it's changing for sure. I think that's a very hopeful answer. And I like that you have compassion for yourself and forgiveness for, like, every day is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
So have you been able to?
I was going to ask, you know, are you writing? Are you keeping a practice right now?
I am very proudly not a writer. I am only a reader. So okay. I have been coming back to reading. It took a while. I was going very slowly. And I still am kind of giving myself space to, like, not be in the mood, but I've had some having books to read for work, or, like, I reread your book because I had read it a couple months ago, and then I read it again to prepare for this, and rereading something was actually really comforting and something nice. And so that's been really good. So yeah, I feel like I've been doing better with reading. And then I've just, again, given myself some space to be like, I'm just watching more TV right now. And, like, that's okay too.
And so, TV holds storytelling lessons. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I am still with the time thing. Like, I am still working full time. So I think, you know, unfortunately, some people have more time because they're not working as much. So it just kind of all depends. And I know you're still working too. So it's
Yeah, I think the thing about not having anywhere to go, a thing that I found hard in the early weeks of this was my work day took over my whole day. You know, my computer is here. I am here. I can answer an email anytime it comes in. Or, you know, it was hard to put a beginning marker and an end marker to the workday. But then I started doing that more carefully. And I think it's better to have those boundaries in place.
Have you been reading? What have you been reading? Or are there any, I really love hearing book recommendations from writers. So I was curious if you had any books that you wanted to talk about.
Yes, absolutely. Recommending books is my favorite thing. I have been reading. And I have a couple books to recommend today. One is The Unpassing by Chia Chia Lin. It is so beautiful. It's about a family of Taiwanese immigrants in Alaska. And just from the first page, it's such a beautiful, devoted, unrelenting, breathtaking book. I loved it. I thought it was so gorgeous. And like you, I have also been reading a lot of nonfiction. I read a lot of nonfiction anyway. And a memoir that I loved recently is this one, The Third Rainbow Girl by Emma Eisenberg. I didn't know very much about West Virginia, and I learned so much about West Virginia from this book. It's hard to describe this book because it is memoir. It has an aspect of true crime. It is also very deeply about place and local and particular knowledge of a place. And there's just something so intimate and ambitious. I flew through it. Yeah, so I think these are probably really good pandemic reads if anybody's looking for one. Nice. And am I allowed to mention a book that comes out later this year?
Yeah, please.
So I was just reading this last night, so it's fresh on my mind, but I was reading a galley for Shruti Swami's debut collection, which is called A House is a Body. It's just a beautiful writer. I've read her stories before, but there's something so powerful about her stories. They're the kind of stories where after you read the last line, you have to pause, you have to gather yourself, and you know that the story has done something to you. She's just a gorgeous writer. I'm very excited for her debut.
Oh, that sounds great. I love short stories, so
yes.
I will definitely get my hands on that one. And you said that you love nonfiction, and I'm getting also that you really enjoy like continuous learning. Like that sounded very official, but like learning and everything. Learning and everything.
I do love learning and everything.
I just want to learn forever. I think that's why I like books so much. Can you talk a little bit about what books or also maybe other media? I know movies, of course, play a big role in the story of a burning as well in a lot of ways, and TV and everything. What you kind of read and took in and different art that influenced the writing of a burning and the story of a burning, and whether it was for research or just books that were maybe touchstones or inspiration or aspiration for you?
I think this might not be exactly the answer that you're looking for, but what comes to mind for me is that a craft challenge that I set myself for this book was I wanted it to be as propulsive and as easy to come back to as the most addictive television. And so I actually, like we touched on TV a little bit earlier and how, you know, everybody is probably watching a lot more TV nowadays. And I think there really are storytelling lessons in the magnetic pull a television show exerts on a viewer. And, you know, people joke about binge watching shows and that kind of thing. But I think there are craft lessons in that. Like, how do you keep someone coming back episode to episode? How do you make someone feel so invested in these characters that they need to know what happens? How do you generate that kind of storytelling velocity and energy? And I think I wanted to have that kind of energy in my book because I knew that I wanted the book to say intellectually serious things about the rise of the right and living in hard places. But I also wanted it to be an entertaining and inviting book, you know? I wanted it to be a book that you can come home from work and pick up and it rewards your time. And so I think paying attention to TV in a half playful and half serious way was really worthwhile for me.
You're like, I have to watch another episode. It's research.
Exactly.
Well, you did it. I think you like succeeded with flying colors with both of those goals. It is intellectually robust without falling into the like, someone just gives a speech about socialism or whatever from like the books of the 20s where like all the last three chapters are just kind of the political creed. But that does like kind of thrum through the book the whole time. And it is so propulsive and so readable. I really just, yeah, I loved it so much. And I hope that everybody picks up a copy at their favorite independent bookstore. Do you have a favorite bookstore that you want to plug? Give a shout out to? You can pick a couple too. I was like, I don't know if I could pick just one.
You know, a really fun thing, a rare silver lining of this moment, I think, has been that now that every store is doing everything online, I feel like any store can be my local indie. And so I've been going to the websites of all of these bookstores around the country, stores that I've never been to in person, but I can see their staff picks. I can see what they feature on the front page, and it gives me a sense of what booksellers around the country are reading and recommending. So I've been buying from Books Are Magic and Greenlight in Brooklyn, of course, but also stores like Point Reyes and Changing Hands and Bull. Yeah, I think it's really a fun moment to support bookstores around the country. If people are able to, I know it's not the best time for, book purchases necessarily for a lot of people. But if people are in a place where they're buying books, I hope they're looking up indies across the country. They're new locals.
Me too. That's true. We have some good ones here in Portland, so it's, we're lucky here also. I'm gonna try this one question that I haven't quite formed yet.
Please.
So I'll cut it out if I don't succeed, but like I am genuinely curious about it. There's a lot of food in the book, and I feel like there's something about, and of course the book is dealing a lot with class, with like Javon wanting to rise to the middle class and the different struggles and PT and everything, but there's a lot of eating and there's a lot of food in the book. And I don't really have my question, but I wondered if you could kind of talk about the role of food for the characters and if they're just eating because people need to eat food, or if you thought about it more than that or anything.
Yeah, you're actually the first person to tell me that you noticed this, and I'm glad you did. I care about food, and I think food has so much to say about aspiration. There's a part in the book where a character looks at cooking videos online and thinks about, you know, all the fancy foods that people have in Western countries, like whipped cream that you can, you know, get from a can and that kind of stuff. And growing up in India, we were definitely exposed to all of these American things, like, you know, burgers and, you know, ice cream sundaes and that kind of thing, which there was something so foreign and aspirational about them. And so much of this book has to do with aspiration, you know, has to do with that kind of longing to improve your life in some way. And so I think that's one of the ways in which food plugs into the book. And there are also some important conversations that take place around meals. And I'm Bengali, and food and meal times are so important to Bengalis. That's kind of what I grew up with. So coming together around a meal feels significant to me. It feels like an opportunity for people to have difficult conversations or for people to be introduced to something. And the context of that is always so interesting to me. Thank you for asking about that. I know that your question will also make me think further about what exactly I was doing.
Yeah, and thank you for letting me ask it like kind of clumsily, but I was just like, there's something going on here and I just kind of want to talk about it. So since I have the opportunity to Zoom with you.
Yeah, no, that was great.
Figured I would go there. I was like, am I just hungry while I'm reading this, or is this like, so, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your taking the time to talk about the book, and
thank
congratulations.
You so much.
I'm so excited for everyone to get a chance to read it, and I hope that people pick it up. And we will also post the books that you recommended in the episode notes and make sure that people have a chance to see that list as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Amanda. Thank you for reading and rereading the book and bringing so much care and thoughtfulness to it. It's such a joy. Thank you.
I had such a lovely time talking with Mega about A Burning. I hope you'll pick up a copy of the novel from your local independent bookstore. Let us know what you thought and who you might want to hear from on future episodes. Find us at literary-arts.org and at literaryarts. I'm Amanda Bullock, and this has been Long Distance. Thanks for listening.
All right, that's it for this episode of Long Distance, a podcast series of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 35 years of literary arts in Portland. To hear more from the Archive Project, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Long Distance is edited by Liz Olofsson, with production oversight from Crystal Liguori. Special thanks to the literary arts staff, board, and community. This podcast would not be possible without them. Thanks also to the band Emancipator for our theme music, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andrew Proctor, and this has been another edition of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. Join us next time and find your story here.